Hey, everyone. I'm Adrian Wojnarowski, host of the Vertical Podcast with Woj, powered by Digital Media, here in our New York studio for what will be the final podcast of 2016, I guess, barring any crazy NBA news here the next few days before the first of the year, some insane trade or retirement or firing or who knows. You never say never in the league, but as of now, our final podcast of the year, we've done 70 plus shows, had over almost 5.2 million downloads and listens to the show, which I'm really grateful for. The audience has been great. There's been a great appetite for the guests that we've had and some of the conversations we've had. And I wanted in the final show to take some of your questions through Twitter and Facebook and answer some questions you have about the show, about the league, about what we've been doing here. And of course, when I posed the question on Twitter last night asking about what guests from the past year and what shows, any background on those or behind the scenes or about the guests themselves or the league, the most consistent question I got right off the bat, of course, was, where did J.J. Redick go? Which is exactly the proper question to ask. His podcast has been tremendous, seminal in a lot of ways in the league. Not just that he's had a podcast with us at the Vertical, but just what a must-listen it has become for people in the league and for fans. I know Adam Silver listens to JJ's podcast, and it's not only because of the Duke connection. I think Adam feels like he learns about his players and learns about his league by listening to JJ, and I think a lot of people do. And obviously, people who followed his podcast closely know that he's taken a hiatus here in the last month or so as he and his wife Chelsea just had another baby. The Clippers obviously have been, in an intense period here. JJ got off to a little bit of a slow start, and I think, and rightly so, he took some time to just sort of gather himself, but he is planning a return here in 2017, and JJ's podcast will be up and running again here in the new year. So we'll keep you posted on that. But for a couple moments on JJ, we talked initially with him about when we launched the Vertical, and I talked to his agent, Greg Lawrence, who I've known for a long time, and talked about the idea of him maybe writing for the Vertical and doing some different stories over the course of the year. What's it like to be a player to go through trade deadline? And what's it like? Just a lot of what's it like from an insider's point of view, a player's point of view. And JJ thought about that a little bit and wasn't quite feeling that. And Greg had a great idea, which was, and we talked about it, which was, what about a podcast? And immediately I thought he'd be great at it because I think to do this, you have to have a natural curiosity. And JJ has a tremendous appetite for knowledge. He's curious about people. He likes to get to know people in all walks of life. And I thought that would serve him very well. But his podcast has just been spectacular. And it was funny. I remember early on, he did a Steve Nash interview, which was great. And again, Nash hasn't done a lot of interviews. I don't know if he's done any since he went to work for the Warriors. But JJ, you know, guys are going to look at JJ differently, and he's going to get access to some people who are going to be comfortable talking with him that they wouldn't be with others. And you've seen a lot of that with his podcast. But someone with the Vertical said to me, this was right after the Suns had made, I think they had fired Jeff Hornacek. And there was a lot of discussion, talk around the league about Robert Sarver. Phoenix, would he have interest in Steve Nash to come coach the team? And someone asked, well, we knew he was doing the podcast with Steve that week, and someone with the Vertical said, hey, is JJ going to ask him about that? And I said, listen, I'm not here to be JJ's editor. He's going to handle these interviews how he wants to do it. He's not a journalist. We're not asking him to be that. We're not asking him to ask tough questions of his guests. I'm not going to say that to him. I'm not going to suggest to him that he brings that issue up with Nash. He's just going to do his interview. And so I get the audio of the interview, and I can hear it before it comes to the audience. And I got the raw copy from Lou Pellegrino, who produces my show and produces JJ's show. And the first question is, hey, Steve, appreciate you doing this. I'm paraphrasing. Appreciate you coming on doing it. Hey, I got to ask you. And he goes right into it. Phoenix fired their coach this week. There's a lot of talk about that, you know, you've got great history there. Do you have any interest in coaching that team? I mean, I would have mealy-mouthed my way and backed into that question. And JJ just asked it right off the top just because he was curious. And you know what? He got a great answer from Steve about where Steve's head was, about coaching in the league or working in the front office. And right away, you just saw he was just has a natural gift to get people to open up, to get them to talk. And I've early on, JJ was sort of like, I don't really know how to do this. He listened to a lot of podcasts. And I know this. I've learned a lot by listening to his podcast and how he conducts interviews and how he asks questions. And it's been remarkable. But he will be back. He will be back on the Vertical podcast here in 2017. So we're excited to have him back on the air, get the pod going again. And we'll keep you updated on that. So let's get to some questions from our Twitter audience, our Facebook audience. I'm going to start with a very broad question from Jeff Shellman, who in his own right was an excellent journalist in his day and great storyteller, had a question for me. Do you have a favorite one, meaning a favorite podcast? My favorites, Heron, the first Bob Myers interview, Kenyon Martin, and Masai Ujiri. Good question, Jeff. We've done over 70 of these, and I can honestly say there wasn't one person that I had on the podcast that I really didn't enjoy either getting to know better or getting to know or didn't really enjoy the conversation. The only way this thing works, from my end anyway, is having great guests, interesting people who have something to say. Adam Silver was our first guest, and certainly that gave the podcast some credibility off the beginning to have him join. I think it was the first podcast he had ever done, and it was on the heels of the Bill Kennedy, the NBA referee, and Rajon Rondo episode where Rondo had hurled some homophobic vitriol toward Bill Kennedy in an NBA game that got Rondo suspended and led to Bill Kennedy coming out and telling the world in a story with me that he indeed was gay. And it was at the time for me, I don't know if I've ever been more uneasy pushing the button to tweet out the story, or once we posted the story on the Vertical, about really just thinking about the fallout for Bill Kennedy and what it was going to be like for him and how people were going to react to this. And a little backstory on it. Before I talked with Adam Silver on the podcast, the Referees Association was very interested in, they wanted this to stop with Bill Kennedy. There had been other comments here and there through the years. It was known within the league that he was gay. And there were people certainly who strongly suspected it. He didn't hide it within the league. And most people in the league, I think, and if he has Bill, this would tell you, were very accepting of him and treated him like every other ref. But there were exceptions occasionally. And the Referees Association, once I sort of got a sense of what was in what Rondo had said to him, they really wanted me to write exactly the names and the verbiage that Rondo used on Bill Kennedy. And I was uneasy about that because I felt it was going to out Bill Kennedy. And if Bill Kennedy wasn't ready to be outed, me reporting exactly what Rondo said was going to, if Bill wasn't ready for that, it was going to make it clear probably to a lot of people that he was gay. And so Bill very quickly decided that he wanted to come out and he felt it was important for himself. He felt it would have a broader impact on a lot of people, and it did. And so he made a decision. The league office knew that I was going to report this. And again, we had, you know, essentially the transcript of what Bill Kennedy and the other referees in that game reported that Rondo had said on the floor. And so I reported the story, and we just happened to have, I think it was a Monday, and I think we taped Adam Silver a day later or maybe 2 days later. But it was his first public comments on about his suspension of Rondo and then about Bill Kennedy coming out, what that meant for the league, what it meant for Bill Kennedy. And that was our first podcast. And to have, you know, that kind of a news hook, news impact certainly got us going. But I really thought the second podcast we did, which was with Bob Myers from the Warriors, Bob in that arena, in that environment, is funny. He's glib and he's very honest. He's not afraid. You're not going to get any cliches out of Bob. You're going to get a lot of honesty. And there's a reason I think he's so well liked and respected within the league. He was as an agent, and he certainly has been as the GM in Golden State. And there was a story Bob told me about. I knew Bob had walked on at UCLA. I knew he was a walk-on player. I think I had talked about it with him in the past here or there. But I never knew the story of how he had become a walk-on. And it just sort of came out organically in the podcast. And I'm going to play a little clip of it right now. And it really spoke to Bob's ability to storytell. And I thought that interview opened up a lot of doors for us on the podcast of what it could be. And I think it gave a blueprint to other executives in the league, coaches, maybe even players, about how maybe the platform would allow them to tell some broader stories and maybe reveal more about themselves. And I really thought that that started right here with Bob Myers.
So I was visiting schools and just trying to figure out where I wanted to go. I'd gotten into UCLA academically and thought, you know what, it might be fun to do something else while at school besides go to school. And my brother had road crew at Washington, or was doing it up there. And so I'd walked in the athletic department with my dad and I said, let's go find the crew coach. So we stumbled upon a guy that was recently here, and Steve Lavin. And Lav, we said, hey, he had a little cubicle.
Right.
I said, hey, where's the crew team? And he looked at it. He said, what are you talking about? I said, you know, the rowing. He said, I don't even think we have that. I said, oh, man. Okay, no problem. And he said, you know, it might be a club sport or something. I said, all right, thanks a lot. And then my dad, who'd went to Purdue, and Lav had coached under Gene Katie, somehow it sparked a conversation. Hey, you went to Purdue? Oh, yeah, Purdue. And then Lav kind of looked at me and probably for the first time, said, why don't you try to play basketball here? And he didn't know me. He didn't know if I was anything good or not. And I said, I don't think I can do that. I can't play basketball at UCLA. Thank you for your time. I will leave you alone. And I said, but I could be a manager, maybe. And he said, no, why don't you try out for the team? And I said, you think I could? I really, this is true. And he said, why don't you come out here and condition with the players? So I got to UCLA early, and these were Ed O'Bannon and Charles O'Bannon.
Now, let me stop you there, yeah. Bob. So you go back to Northern California and you finish your high school year and you're telling your friends, hey, I want to try to walk on at UCLA.
No.
You kept
it
quiet.
Of course, I did. Okay. They'd laugh me out of the gym. I'd have no friends. So I left honestly. My honest thoughts were, he doesn't know how bad I am. I can't play basketball at UCLA, right? Because he'd never seen me play. He said, but maybe I can hang around the team. Really, I thought I could be the manager. And so I remember calling him from Northern California. I remember where I was at my house in Northern California saying, hey, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. I would love to be the manager. And he, again, laughed, said, no, man, come try out for the team. And I said, all right, fine. So then when I got to UCLA, very intimidated. I was extremely intimidated. These were the best players in the country. I mean, this UCLA was the place to go for sure. And
Jim Herrick was the head coach.
Herrick was the head coach, right. who I didn't get to speak to, which is fine. He's got other things to do. Yeah. So I did condition. In conditioning at that time, no balls, just running, getting in shape. I was one of the 14 guys or 13 guys conditioning with these guys. I didn't tell anybody really. I was a little embarrassed because, I mean, I thought they didn't talk to me. The players didn't.
Right.
But they weren't, they weren't mean, right. But I wasn't in the club. Probably wondered why I was there. And, so I did that for a while. And I remember to your previous question, I didn't really tell anybody because I thought it's probably not going to happen. And it probably sounds stupid, right? To people, even at UCLA that I was interacting with, they'd say, where are you going? I'd say, I got to go somewhere. And then I was going to condition with it. In any event, then I tried out. They invited about 100 kids to walk on tryouts, but I've been the only one conditioning.
Right.
And I did it for half an hour of the tryouts. I'm extreme, probably the most nervous I've ever been in my life. But I played decently. And then Herrick, who came to watch a little bit of it, Jim Herrick, was sitting on a chair and he called me over. He said, hey, son, congratulations. We're going to give you a spot on the team. And then he got up from his chair and left. And I thought, I thought, are you kidding me? I didn't even tell anybody.
Right.
Because I didn't believe it.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
Listen, over 70 interviews, and Jeff Shellman here on Twitter asked Chris Herren, Kenyon, and the Chris Herren one, who I've known since I was a young reporter in Fresno. Chris was a player at Fresno State, and it's what Chris talks about every day as a recovering addict, something he's lived for 5, 6, 7 years in recovery now and fought the demons of substance abuse most of his adult life. Chris and I got to know each other when he was playing at Fresno State. I was covering Fresno State at the Fresno Bee back in the late 90s. And when I knew Chris back then, it was hard to get Chris to even look you in the eye when you had a conversation with him. That person that people see now with Chris Herren, just wildly generous and giving and sensitive and great empathy for so many different people and kids. And what he does every day, traveling the country, you know, from one day it's Alabama football, the next day it's, you know, a middle school in central Illinois somewhere. He brings the same passion and care to every single one of these, no matter how many he does. And I asked him about that, which it just – I had him come to my old high school in Connecticut at Bristol Central High School. Aaron Hernandez had graduated from Bristol Central, and there were a lot of conversations and issues going on at Central at my old school about the issue of drugs and about whatever role – people wanted to believe the high school had played in Aaron Hernandez's development and years later. And I thought it would be important to have Chris go in there. I thought it would be helpful to them to have Chris go in. And I helped set that up. This was a couple years ago. And I watched Chris do it in person, just like you saw in the 30 for 30. And it's just remarkable how much he gives of himself each time. And I asked him in the podcast about how do you get up to do it every time? How do you not just sort of mail this conversation in, this talk you give hundreds of times a year? Why does it always feel like it's the first time you've ever given it? And I asked them that in the podcast.
They know how important it is to some of these kids, and they know that lives have changed because of it. We have people literally pull into our driveway on a Saturday. We had a mom a month ago, no idea what to do with her son who was a heroin addict, pull right into my driveway and apologize and cry her eyes out on my front lawn saying, will you please help my son? This is our world. And Heather knows it. The kids know it. And for now, it's something that I'm extremely passionate about. So I'll continue to do. Maybe I'll slow down 250 days. Maybe I'll pull back a little. But yesterday, I'm in the high school in Baltimore, and they're having sound issues. And they couldn't get the video prepped. And we wasted about 30 minutes trying to get this video in this school in inner city Baltimore. And the people that sponsored it were saying, well, why don't we just go? Because it's not going to. And I looked at these kids sitting in the seat. And a gentleman who taught at this high school looked at me and he put his arm around me. He said, Chris, you know and I know you cannot walk out on these kids. So I ran down the auditorium, got out in front, and went at it for 45 minutes with no video, with no introduction. And to see their reaction when I was finished, you know, it's priceless. I met a mom who before the age of 22 buried three children, three boys, because of heroin overdoses. The night I met her, she brought her daughter to listen to me speak, who was 19 and currently on heroin. There was a good chance that woman was going to lose four children before the age of 22. I cannot walk away and say I can't help you. I can't.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
One other podcast that stood out to me, which was, and again, it gets back to the one, some of the ones I think were especially emotional. I sat down with Spurs GM R.C. Buford in Las Vegas Summer League, right a day or two, it was 2 days after I think Tim Duncan announced his retirement. And the one thing about RC is he's not that interested in doing a podcast where he's going to talk about himself. And maybe someday we'll get him to do that. But RC's more, you can get him to talk about everything else, his players, his organization, his coach, his friends in the league. But I thought the best way to get RC on the show, and it felt like so many shows, we were always talking about him because you'd have Sean Marks or you'd have Manu Ginobili, you'd have even GMs who did not work for the Spurs are influenced by RC. He's had a tremendous impact around the league. There's very few executives in the league who make a move without asking RC's advice. And I always thought that was interesting about him. Like, you could be leaving one of a rival of the Spurs to go to another rival, and an executive will still ask RC his advice because they know it's not going to be self-serving where, you know, where he wants to manipulate, hey, that guy's really good, I don't want him at our rival or a team that could challenge us, I'm not going to give this guy honest feedback. They know he will, and they kind of care what he thinks. And so lots of coaches, executives will ask RC his advice on moves, people who've gotten to know him through the years and really value his advice. But we did say, hey, listen, once Tim retires, how about you come on the podcast and we'll just talk about Tim and Tim's history with the Spurs and your relationship. And he said, great. And so when Tim retired that week, we sat down in Vegas in a conference room at Thomas and Mack. And I did three podcasts right in a row. Three was I really enjoyed. Mike D'Antoni, Dave Griffin, right after the Cavs had won the title. And then RC in the aftermath of the Duncan retirement. And what I try to do when I prepare for these podcasts, even guys that I do know well, I will go around and try to, in preparing, I want to ask a lot of questions of other people. Is there something that maybe I wouldn't be thinking about that I should think about asking about, or something, I don't know, a story that maybe he hasn't talked about that might fit well in? And so I was talking to some of the Spurs front office people who were out in Vegas Summer League, and one of them said to me, hey, ask RC about walking past Duncan's locker since he's – they kind of knew he was retiring, and it was kind of – I think it was boxed up, and there were some boxes in there. And that RC would get emotional walking through the locker room and just looking over at Tim's locker and just kind of knowing it's empty now and he's not going to be back playing. And so I kept that in the back of my mind and I said, okay, I'm going to ask that during the podcast, except that RC was so emotional and was still so raw to him during the podcast. Every time I thought of asking it to him, I kind of just knew he, I just thought he was going to break down and just lose it. And I didn't want to do it to him. And there were a few times where he got very choked up and emotional where I just tried to push the questions or something a little lighter and then come back to some of the heavy stuff. And finally, we were near the end and he told the story. And actually, if you remember Greg Popovich's on Duncan's retirement night recently, at the very end when Pop got choked up and he talked about a conversation he had with Tim Duncan's father, where Tim Duncan's father said to Popovich, when, and to RC, I think, when Tim first arrived, that I want him to leave this organization. I want him to leave his career the same person he's come in, meaning don't let this place, don't let this thing change who he is at his core. And Tim Duncan's parents had both passed away, and Popovich that night, and it was at the very end of his tribute to Duncan, essentially said that I can tell his parents and I can tell Mr. Duncan that this man, and he pointed at Tim, this man has not changed. But RC told that story on the podcast, and it was near the end, and he got very choked up and emotional, and probably the third or fourth time in the podcast that he did, and I did not have the heart to ask the question about the Tim Duncan boxes and the locker, because it would have been cruel and inhumane punishment, because he was certainly, it was so raw to him, still the retirement. But RC told that story at the end of the podcast, if you remembered, if you listened, and really broke down. And I knew I've got to get him out of here. I think we were near the end of the conversation anyway, but it just spoke to what they built in San Antonio and the relationships there, and just how unique of a community they have among Duncan and Pop and RC and Manu Ginobili. And that's another one. The Manu Ginobili interview, somebody asked on Twitter, maybe one you really wanted that you haven't gotten yet. But the one that I really wanted that I did get was Manu. And I've known Manu a long time and covered him a lot internationally. And I think he appreciated that a little bit, that I've written about him in the Olympics, and whether it was in Greece or in London or in Beijing, I've always loved writing about that Argentina team and those players and what they accomplished, in addition to his career with the parallel career with the Spurs. And so I asked Manu about doing the podcast and talked to Tom James, their PR person, and we said, let's find a place on the road. And that's the one interesting thing. Guys like doing these on the road when they're home. And I've done a lot in guys' cities, but sometimes you get a better focus from a guest, a player, when they're away from home. When sometimes you're at home and your team's there, like practice is over and you're done working out, you want to go home and see your family, or there's other stuff going on. Typically, you just sort of meet a guy in a Midwestern city where maybe there's less to do or less going on, and it's an off day. And I found that it's funny. I've done two of them in Indianapolis, and I love Indianapolis. I think it was just more geography, but Draymond Green and Manu Ginobili, who are two great talkers, both in Indy on road trips. But to sit down with Manu, I just knew, like, you're only going to get a window of time here. And I could have went 3 or 4 hours with him because he's lived so much. He's seen so much. Those Spurs teams, what he's meant to international basketball. And that was one podcast where I spent a lot of time asking people about Manu. And I've written a ton, and I felt like I knew a lot. But there's always something else, a story, an anecdote. And I would say with Manu that I talked to 6 or 7 or 8 different former teammates, front office people. I remember asking Sam Presti about him. Sam was in – the Oklahoma City GM was in San Antonio with him. He gave me a couple ideas for questions. Malik Rose, who works in Atlanta front office, I saw him scouting on the road. We talked about it. I know I asked RC about him. Steve Kerr, when we were in when I was out in Golden State, I told him I was doing the podcast with Manu, and he gave me a question to ask, which was when there was kind of like a moment of truth between Pop and – they really went at it the first year, year and a half. And Steve just remembers a moment of truth between Pop and Manu that he remembers in the locker room and coming in. And I asked Manu about that, and he had a great answer. But there was one that I just remember getting chills when he told the story with me. We were sitting in a hotel room in Indianapolis at the, you know, at one of the downtown hotels, and just sitting across from each other at the desk. And I asked Manu about coming back to beat Miami in the finals after having lost that heartbreaker the year before. And we're going to play his answer for you here. But as he answered this question, I just remember getting chills and not even remember knowing where to go with the next question, because it just the rawness of it. And if you follow Manu, you know how emotional he is, how he feels things. This response just, yeah, I had chills down my spine when he answered it this way.
The only moment where I thought, oh, we're going to get it this time, it was after game 3 in the finals, when I saw that something clicked. I think the one that drove us, that the one that was more determined this time, was Pop, for sure. He was a madman all year long, and he pushed us and yelled at us and screamed, and for a moment said, stop, relax for a little bit. We won 58 games. But no, he was not going to take it. And he was a beast, for sure. He dragged us that year. And once we got to those finals, then our head changed too. And what happened that game 3 made us understand completely what had to be done, what could be done. And I at that point, I was pretty sure.
I mean, you were so dominant in that series. You took Miami apart. You never let them breathe after, as you said, after that game 3. Was it, did it almost feel cathartic as these weren't close games. It was as if you took everything out on them. Is that how it felt?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
What it looked like watching.
It was. It was like, you know, when a beast is blooding and hurt and going with the last thing they had, we were so hurt from the year before that I remember every time out, every halftime, every whatever, we were up 15, we were up 20, and we were talking, take them to 25, let's take them to 30, and don't blink, keep playing. And we played every possession. It was a remarkable finals for us. It's hard to explain what we felt out there competing every possession. It was fun, and we shared the ball very well, and we all felt important. It's not that, you know, we gave the ball to Kawhi and he scored 40 and we all just watching. We all scored. We all played D. We all rebounded. It was very, very fun to be part of.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
We'll get back to more of your questions in a moment, but now I've got a message from Capital One. Capital One knows you've got questions about your credit. You may be asking, who's really in charge of my credit score? Or how does my credit actually work? That's why Capital One created the CreditWise app, so you can check your credit score anytime you want, right in the app. And it's free to everyone, Capital One customer or not. In fact, millions of CreditWise users have improved their score by 20 points or more. So download the app for free today. Availability depends on presence of credit history from TransUnion. CreditWise is offered by Capital One Bank USA NA. Our next question from Twitter, Brick City, at Bricks, B-R-I-K-S, 42. Brick City asks, was it explicitly determined beforehand that you, Embiid, and Brett Brown would not mention Sam Hinkie? Now, obviously, that's a question about the podcast I did with Sixers center Joel Embiid and Sixers coach Brett Brown earlier in this regular season down in Camden at the Sixers practice facility. And the answer to that is no. And the broader answer to that is I have not in any podcast that I recall negotiated or really been asked to not ask about something. Anybody who's done it has, there's been nobody beforehand who has said, hey, don't ask me about this. I'm not going to answer it. You have a limited amount of time here and you make decisions about what ground you're going to cover. And I think I've gotten a little bit better. I think I was a little too rigid earlier in the podcast where I sort of had a sense of exactly what I wanted to ask. And I didn't do a good job of when the guest would start taking me on a tangent to go with them and to maybe just move the whole thing in a different direction. I think I got better at that, but almost every podcast or every interview, you look back and go, oh, why didn't I ask that? Or I meant to ask that, but I just forgot or never got to it or it never fit. As for Sam Hinkie with those guys, you could make a case. I should have asked about Hinkie. I don't think I asked about Brian Colangelo either, the new GM. I think the focus of that interview and that conversation was about Embiid's road back and having Brett Brown sit in on it. I've done that a couple times in interviews where sometimes it makes a guest feel comfortable to have somebody else. Another example of that, Yao Ming, I had his agent, Bill Duffy, at All-Star Weekend, and Yao is maybe as surprising. I know how thoughtful Yao was. I thought having Bill Duffy there would make Yao more comfortable to answer questions, and having Duffy there with him, what that helped was when we were talking about Yao's journey to getting to the NBA, there were a lot of, you know, sort of technical questions and process questions that Bill was involved in that maybe Yao wouldn't have remembered because Bill was doing the deal with the league and cutting through all the red tape to get Yao over here. And I thought it complemented each other well. And Yao was really forthcoming in that interview, really open about a lot of things. But back to Embiid and Brett Brown, I thought having Brett in there was helpful. I think it made Joel a little more comfortable. And I also think that Brett's perspective on Joel in that conversation worked. And why I didn't ask about Sam Hinkie, no reason other than I thought the conversation was on a track with those guys. But that doesn't mean I was right to do it exactly how I did it. I'm always going to second guess myself and try to get better at it. But I have not had anybody ask me to, you know, not ask about specific things. It's a decision I'm going to make in the course of the interview. Here's a question from Avid Pacer, @avid_pacer, who asks, you've had some guests get new gigs, and then he mentions Mike D'Antoni, and others not so much, and he mentions Patrick Ewing. Do you sense PR, public relations tours with guys? Interesting question. Just to clarify, when I did the Mike D'Antoni interview at Summer League, he had already been hired as the Rockets coach. And that was really, I think, one of the first places D'Antoni talked about turning the ball over to James Harden this season and that he thought he could get 12, 13 assists a game. And the one thing I remember about that interview with D'Antoni, again, he already had the job in Houston, but I remember asking him about in his time with the Lakers and with the Knicks, what he didn't do well there that he wanted to do well here. And he felt it was relationships with the star player, and that while he thought he told his guys, I've got an open door policy, come talk to me anytime, that he didn't build a good enough relationship with Kobe Bryant and Dwight Howard, and he certainly didn't build a close enough relationship with Carmelo Anthony, and that he was going to work on that with the Rockets, that it wasn't enough just to say, hey, I'm always available to you, that he had to work at it every day. He had to be more proactive in doing that, and certainly he's done that in Houston. They've had a tremendous start to the season, better than I think anybody imagined, and right now I think Mike D'Antoni's probably the NBA Coach of the Year over this, you know, relatively short span of time. An avid Pacer asked about Patrick Ewing, and asking about PR tours. Patrick has been an assistant coach for 14 years, I think, now in the league. And Patrick in and of himself is more than worthy of a podcast, whether he wants to be a head coach or not. He's one of the 50 greatest players of all time. He's one of the stars of his generation and has gotten into the coaching fraternity and really paid his dues as an assistant coach. And he's the associate head coach in Charlotte now. And before I did the interview with Patrick, he listened to the podcast that I did with Jeff Van Gundy, the first podcast I did with Jeff Van Gundy, where we really just talked about coaching, Jeff's career, how Jeff might do some things differently if he were to come back and coach again. And Patrick had not been a big consumer of podcasts, but listened to Jeff's and liked the ability to talk at length, which a lot of guys don't get to do. And that's what podcasts allow you to do, is really give people a sense of yourself. And did Patrick think that it might be helpful for him, for owners and general managers, to hear him talk about coaching and what he might do as a head coach, that it might be helpful to maybe help him get some interviews? Absolutely. And did I know that that was Patrick's, one of his thoughts about doing the podcast? Absolutely. And we talked about this beforehand, and I just said, Patrick, we're going to talk about what you've done as a coach and what you would do as a head coach. How you'd run a team, what you've learned. And I understood from Patrick's point of view, he hasn't been able to get interviews. And it's dumbfounding to me that he hasn't, given the coaches he's worked under, how smart Patrick is, and how much he's been responsible for on really good teams. In Orlando with Stan Van Gundy, in Houston with Jeff, and now in Charlotte where they've done a great job under Steve Clifford. And so I just had said to Patrick, hey, listen, I'm going to ask you about growing up in segregated Boston at the time you did, and your career and life. And we're going to talk about those things, and we're going to talk about your coaching aspirations. And he was like, great. I love it. And I thought, for me, it was one, I think in Patrick's case, especially, you don't hear assistant coaches talk a lot. It's usually the head coach talking. And you didn't hear Patrick talk a lot as a player, either with the Knicks or even at Georgetown at a very young age. And I think unfairly so, that Patrick is sometimes judged by what people remember of him as a pretty private player. The guy's in his early 50s now, and he's been coaching for a decade and a half, and he's got a great personality. He's got a great demeanor with players. He game plans, and he's tactically, you're not going to be the associate head coach with Steve Clifford if you're not a good basketball coach. You're just not. And, you know, so the question is, was it a PR tour? I don't know. I do think this. I got to ask the questions that I was really curious about with Patrick, and I think that listeners, we talked about his recruiting trip to North Carolina. He and Michael Jordan actually went to UNC together on the same weekend. Michael might have known who Patrick was, because Patrick was the number one player in the country. Michael wasn't. And Patrick had never heard of Michael Jordan. And they ended up playing pickup over in, I guess it was Carmichael or one of the gyms at Carolina. And, you know, Patrick said Michael was talking as much trash there as he did against them in the league years later. And of course, those two end up meeting up in the national championship game, you know, thereafter. So we hit on a lot of that stuff. But hey, listen, if there was a window in there where it was helpful to Patrick for people to hear how he would go about running an NBA team, coaching an NBA team, I think that's great.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
We'll get back to more of your questions in a minute, but I want to talk to you guys about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a very confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to, and none of those other ticket sites seem to want to change that. But as you know, SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. And it's pretty neat how they do it, too. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and you never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and they'll let you know if the ticket prices fall. And even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I use it often because it's simple and it works. And best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. They show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with big fees on the checkout page. Now, pay close attention to this next part because it's real important. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. That's $20 right into your pocket. And to get it, all you've got to do is this. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Then enter promo code WOJ, W-O-J. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. It does not get any easier than that. So support SeatGeek the way they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code WOJ today. I'm going to answer a question here, guys, that I was not asked by anybody on Twitter or on Facebook. And it gets to the fear that I feel with every podcast I do that's outside of our great studio here in New York. So I have to bring the equipment, the microphone and this, it's called a Tascam, and you bring it with you on the road to tape the interviews. And it's really simple, but that doesn't stop me from believing I'm going to screw it up at every turn. And so there's plenty of interviews I'm doing. I can see a little red light when I'm conducting an interview where the voice, you could tell it's picking up the voice and it's taping it. I have not lost one interview. I've screwed up the volume on a few. We have a great engineer, Chris Basil, who can make my mistakes. You don't know that I screwed up the taping of it or did not do exactly what I was supposed to because he kind of makes some magic in the studio. But there's plenty where I just fear this thing's not taping and I'm going to have to look this guy in the eye after and say, we just wasted an hour of your life because I didn't get any of this down. That hasn't happened yet, but it did come close to happening with Kyrie Irving. It was one of the first interviews last year. I met him in San Antonio, and at the time, there were two pieces of equipment that I could bring. One was simple, and one was a little more complicated. You had to be able to pick up the wireless where you were to transmit the interview back to our studio. And I was trying at that time to still use that equipment, and that was the last time I did. I just brought a new piece that was simpler after that. But when I was trying to be cute about this and have this a little more complicated taping process. So I met Kyrie. We were in their hotel in San Antonio the night before they played the Spurs last year, and we were going to knock off the interview there. Right, the team had just landed, just gotten to the hotel, and so I was in there like 2 hours early trying to get set up, and I could not get the wireless to connect and to connect it back to our studio in New York, and literally I was sweating, and Kyrie was great, comes in, said hello, we're talking. I said, oh, I'll have this ready in a minute, but of course I did not. And it was Dave Griffin. It was Dave Griffin, the Cavs GM, who finally figured out how I could connect to the wireless in the hotel to transmit the interview back to New York. And Griff stayed in there and messed with this thing with me for half an hour. We had our engineer and producers on speakerphone. And to Kyrie's credit, he just hung out. He was cool about it. He was great. And thought we had a great conversation, a great interview, although as we were doing it, there was still this fear in me that none of it was recording and that, you know, it was going to turn out to be a disaster, but it did not. Kyrie was great, but that, again, is my general fear. I am the least tech-savvy guy to ever do any of this, but they've kind of made this thing so simple that even dummies like me can figure out how to tape it. The other thing I finally learned with big guys, and I can still see Patrick Ewing and I can see Kendrick Perkins, there's a microphone there's a microphone that sits on a stand. Now, if you're my height, you can sit there, you can lean forward at a desk, and you don't think about it. And I, looking back, I don't know why. If you ever seen Dirk Nowitzki at a press conference, Dirk's always holding that mic, and he sort of holds it like, you know, he's singing karaoke or something, but he holds that mic up by his mouth instead of leaning into the stand. And for the first few times, it never occurred to me to pull that mic out of the stand, and I can still see Patrick Ewing sitting there with his knees, like his chin was almost at his knees because he's trying to lean forward to just, because I'm a dummy, and lean into the mic for me. Same with Kendrick Perkins. And it was finally after I was talking to my producer, Lou, and I said, this is a problem. And he's like, well, just have them take the mic out and hold it in their hands. And so I do think in the future, the 7 foot guys, the 6'10 to 7'1 guys who are sitting at a desk, especially if we do it in a hotel, who are sitting at a desk, we're going to pull the mic out and I'm not going to wreck anybody's knees here going forward. All right. Here's another Twitter question from Pass the Peas at Pass the P-E-A-S-E. Not quite sure. Pass the Peas like at the dinner table or maybe there's a – anyway, Pass the Peas ass. Do you ever turn notifications on your phone before you drop a Woj bomb just to see it vibrate to death? I don't do that, although I did do something this year before I broke a story. So the All-Star game was being moved to New Orleans, and I was reporting that Charlotte was out and the game was likely going to be moved to New Orleans. It might have been two separate stories. I know I reported Charlotte was not going to get the game, and then I think shortly after, New Orleans was the front runner. But before I reported the New Orleans story, I had been looking online to see the hotel prices. I did go online and reserve several rooms at pretty good rates at hotels in New Orleans, some of the really good downtown ones, to have some extra rooms for my staff. We probably could save a little money on it because I knew once I reported it, the rooms were going to get besieged and you would end up paying crazy rates. So it wasn't like I booked up the whole town. I think I booked 5 rooms at 5 different big downtown hotels. But I did do that before I broke the story. Took like an extra 8 or 10 minutes and did that. And so we have some pretty good rates downtown, maybe better than the rest of the media block. The other one along those lines, and you know, my son's in a fantasy basketball league, he and his buddies, and so they did their fantasy draft in our house, and so they're asking for sleepers and guys, and I don't even understand what fantasy fully, like what you get points for and what matters, but they're kind of looking for guys who they thought would, you know, be, you know, sleepers this year that I thought might play more minutes or have a bigger role than maybe they were aware of. But the one thing that I have resisted doing is, and I took some heat from my wife on this, was to not tell my son or any of those guys, if I know that there's a player coming back sooner from an injury than maybe it's been reported or I've been able to report yet, I took some grief for giving a heads up to someone in the fantasy group that, hey, this guy is going to be back in just a week or two. It's not going to be a month. You might want to pick him back up before I report it. And my wife was like, knock it off. It's not fair. It's not fair to the game that you're doing that. So I don't. So they have to just follow along. And whether I report it or somebody else reports it, that's when they're able to pick their guys back up off of waivers or however it works on Fantasy Hoops. All right, let's jump over to Facebook. To Teresa Guyen, she asks, best Craig Sager story. Now, I would not presume to know Craig Sager very well, other than to say hello to him in passing at an arena where we certainly cross paths a lot of times over a lot of years. But a couple stories. One, I don't know if it was last season or the year before. I don't remember if it was before he was diagnosed or after. But I remember standing in a locker after a playoff game. Pretty sure it was Spencer Hawes at a Charlotte playoff game here in the last couple of years. I remember this. And I was standing at the locker interviewing him, asking about something with the game or something after a game. And we were standing there alone one-on-one. And there's kind of an unwritten rule, although it's sort of been – the guys who came up in the business with me know what it is. I think lately guys don't understand it or they pay less – they don't honor it anymore. But – I know I sound like the old guy, but if you have somebody one-on-one, you have them alone, That means everyone else kind of has to stay away till you're done. Now, two people at a locker can mean 20 people. Everybody can come in. But if you have somebody alone and you're doing a one-on-one interview, it's kind of always been an unwritten rule that you get to finish your one-on-one because you've got that guy alone, and then other people can come in when you're done. And so I was standing with Hawes at his locker and talking about whatever. And here came Craig with his camera guy, maybe one or two camera guys, and with his microphone and his one of his loud blazers. And he just rolls right into the interview and starts asking questions to Spencer, turn the camera on. And I'm kind of standing there going, hey, man, like what? I didn't say anything, but I'm kind of looking at him like, come on, man, this isn't how you do it. And I'm sort of just standing there. So I let him, I didn't interrupt it, and I let him ask his questions. And so I'm just still kind of looking at him. And he finishes, and it wasn't a big deal. I could finish up what I was going to ask after. And he could see me kind of looking at him like, come on, man, that's not exactly how we're supposed to be doing this. And he just looked at me and he said, hey, live TV. And he smiled and he shrugged and he walked out. And I said, all right, live TV, I get it. And you couldn't get – it was somebody else. You might have gotten angrier, but there's Craig in his jacket and he's still smiling and laughing. And you just – you couldn't be bothered by it. He was unique. But seeing Craig at playoff games last year especially, to see him walking – I remember standing there with an assistant coach on the floor at a playoff game, and Craig came walking by and he was – really struggling, obviously. He was going through chemo, and you've heard all the stories in the aftermath of his passing and even before, but he would go to chemo and then he would get on a plane and go cover a game. And when people would see him on air, he could muster it up and you wouldn't even necessarily know something that he was going through this. But when the camera was off and he was sort of gathering himself, it was profound to see him working. He might be sitting near you on press row, but I just remember standing with an assistant coach from somewhere talking before a playoff game, and Craig walked by, and he was really short, small steps, and his head was down, and you could tell he was in great agony. He was struggling just to walk across the court, and I just remember saying with the coach, A, it's unbelievable what he's doing, and B, and I think we both said, could we do that? Would we want to keep working through this? It made you ask a lot of questions about yourself and what you would be capable of. But the answer is no, I don't think I'd be capable of it. And his spirit and what he brought night in and night out at these games when you'd see him was just – I think it'll stay with anybody who was around him. And again, I wasn't close to him. I didn't know him other than to say hello. So I can only imagine the people who knew him well – and really understood what he was going through and knew it at a different level, just how profound his legacy is going to be even after his passing now. That'll do it for our final show here in 2016. Just a big thank you again to everyone for listening, for reaching out, telling your friends, your coworkers about the podcast. I don't think there's any greater way to market your podcast than by word of mouth. I think if people like it, they tell their friends about it and you build your audience that way. And I know that's how we've done it here at the Vertical Podcast. Big thank you to our whole staff, Lou Pellegrino, our producer, Chris Basil, our engineer, Sean Cherry, Chris Corker, and everyone at Digital Media, which has really made this easy for us. We work with the best of the best here at the Vertical Podcast. With Digital Media. Of course, a big thanks to our sponsors today and throughout the year, SeatGeek and Capital One. Here's to a great 2017, everyone. Thanks for sticking with us here at the Vertical Podcast. We'll catch you in the new year.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.